Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome inside the playbook once again for a Wednesday here on American Airlines Patriots.com radio. Wish I could get like a free flight or something for every time I mention American Airlines. Yeah, Eric Scalavino, you know, from PFW is with us. Don't you wish you could, like, you know, immediately score, you know, dividends for, you know, little sponsored drops every time you get a chance to drop one?
First class seats to somewhere would be great, yeah.
Just a little upgrade maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
First class upgrade on, you know, a flight every time you mention it.
Yeah, wouldn't be bad. You'd be stockpiling a lot of certificates that way.
Be all set for the next 20 years.
You're not kidding. You're not kidding. Well, we got a lot of news that's actually going on in and around and surrounding the team today. To get us started, by the way, that was a spirited crossover between us and your mates at PFW, so that was also good. And you know, I'm willing to wager Fred does not call the NFL, but, you know, I guess we'll wait and see, you know?
He'll make a call. He might get hung up on, but he'll make the call.
Maloney.
Okay. We'll see if he gets back to us on that one. First and foremost, coming up in just a little bit, Mark Johnson from KOA Radio in Denver, who's the sports director of the flagship affiliate for the Denver Broncos. He's going to join us to talk about the Broncos and the matchup and the fact that you know, this team is, you know, apparently a little bit better than everybody gave it credit for, and certainly the impact that Josh McDaniels has had on the team. And, you know, I'm sitting here watching, actually, Eric, I'm sitting here watching NFL replay, and it just happens to be the Dallas-Denver game from this past week.
Mm-hmm.
And I just watched Lamont Jordan gouge the middle of the Dallas defense. I'm thinking, didn't we have that guy at one time?
Yeah.
So, you know, Denver does look like a relatively typical Denver team. I'm sure, you know, Josh has put his own twist to it. But to me, I mean, even though, you know, they may not have quite as much flash offensively as they might have had under Mike Shanahan, they still look like they want to emphasize the running game, and they want to, you know, very much in a Bill Belichickian way, you know, pound the ball at you if they can.
Yeah, I'll take the trade, though. We gave up Lamont Jordan, as you said, but we got Fred Taylor. I think we got the better end of that bargain.
Probably so. Probably so. And I say that because I know you guys spent a lot of time toward the tail end of the show, you know, warping on Lawrence Maroney again, which is fine. But frankly, I've beaten that dead horse, and I don't want to beat it anymore.
Yep.
And I say that with all due respect to Lawrence the person, because I think he's, you know, he seems to be an okay person.
Sure.
But football wise, it's not working here, and he should probably try some other place. And I think a lot of us knew that a year ago.
Yeah, but, I mean, you got to give a first-round pick the chance to at least play out his contract.
I don't disagree with him. I don't disagree with that. I just think that it's, you know, they're not re-signing him, nor should they re-sign him. And, you know, he needs to, you know, go find a role for himself someplace, because he's had plenty of opportunity here, and it just hasn't worked. And I'm a proponent now of making sure that, you know, not only do you keep a first-round draft pick for next year, but I think you got to draft a running back.
Yeah, maybe. Or sign a free agent, depending on who's on the market.
Well, depends on who's. I don't even know who's coming out free agency for next year.
Yeah, we haven't really gotten to that point.
No, and nor will we. But, I mean, there may be some who have some thoughts on that. Fans who follow free agency. And, hey, that'd be great. If you have some ideas on free agent running backs for next year, send us a thought. Webradio@patriots.com, and we can start kicking it around. Mark Johnson will join us to talk about the Broncos. And then in our second hour today, Vic Carucci, our good friend from NFL.com and frequent contributor here inside the playbook, he's going to join us to not only look at the Pats and the Broncos and their great start as well, but to take a look at a few of the key things around the NFL, of which there are several to talk about today. I don't know if you guys had a chance to talk about this earlier in the show, but I am going to bring it up here again for those that are just logging on. Junior Seau, according to Adam Schefter from ESPN, Junior Seau is going to sign and join the team next week.
Really?
That has been reported today by Adam Schefter.
I hadn't seen that yet,
that
report. There's been so many conflicting reports about Seau and when he's coming and if he's coming and all this that it's hard to keep straight what's actually, you know, relevant, legitimate news. But if it's coming from Schefter, that's makes you think that there's a little bit more validity to it.
Well, I kind of surmised a little bit yesterday that, you know, I don't know that it made a lot of sense for him to come, you know, onto the team this week, come all this way when they're going to end up going back out to Denver. I said, if it happens, maybe he just meets him in Denver. But then he doesn't get the benefit of working out with the team. And so it really didn't make sense for him to join the team from a logistical point of view this week.
Well, you say that, though, but last year when he joined the team, I think it was on a Friday, and the next day we traveled to the West Coast for our back-to-back games. So
wasn't there a little bit more of an immediate need for his services last year?
Well, yeah, but I don't think there's any more of a I don't think there was any more of a need last year than there is this year. We lost.
Oh, I see.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see. I mean, the logistical argument really, I don't think, makes too much sense to me because they've proven that it doesn't matter when or who they're playing, that they're going to, you know, bring him in whenever they feel like they need him.
Well, that sure could very well be.
You know, the only thing, and he even joked about that last year when he came back for his return introductory press conference, saying,
jump right back on a plane.
You know, yeah, I flew all the way out here from California. Now we're going to tomorrow leave and go all the way back to where I just came from. And, mm-hmm. you know, it was just kind of coincidental timing there. But, you know, maybe the good news to report is that since last Friday, Gerard Mayo has been back on the practice field.
Right.
Which is encouraging. I mean, nobody expected him to play this past week against the Ravens, and I don't even expect him to play this week against the Broncos.
Do you really expect to see him before the bye week?
No, I would be surprised if he comes back that early. I've said from the beginning, I think after the bye week is the perfect time. Give him enough chance to recuperate and heal. But he's obviously at a level where he can run around on it, or he wouldn't be at practice.
Right.
So I'm encouraged by the fact that he must be healing quicker than everybody thought.
He's probably just getting himself, trying to get back himself into some game shape. But seeing as there's really, I mean, there's this week, and then obviously there's the Titans game, and then the Bucks game in London. I mean, you know, so it's still going to be, you know, in theory, 4 weeks for him, you know, to recover.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's only been out now for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it only happened 3 weeks ago. So
right.
I would see no reason why you would want to rush him back. It just sounds to me that maybe the injury wasn't quite as bad as some people feared. Normally when you talk about an MCL sprain, you're talking 6 to 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and maybe he's just a little bit of a – either the grade of the sprain wasn't quite as bad, or maybe he's just a faster healer, one or the other.
Maybe, but you have to be encouraged by the sight of him out on the practice field.
No question.
And so maybe that's a reason why well, I see. Even then, I don't know why you would wait to sign Seo if you know for one extra week. I don't understand the timing. If that's turns out to be the case that they waited one extra week for it, I don't understand why. I mean, if you need a guy, you need a guy. Just sign him whenever you need
him. That's true. But then maybe they just decided, you know, that was a little bit too much of a hassle if he had to tie up some personal things or whatever. Suffice it to say, that's what ESPN and Adam Schefter reported just a little while ago, is that Seo's signing will be postponed by a week, and that he will sign next week after the game with Denver this weekend, and then he will therefore be, I guess, in uniform conceivably against Tennessee the following weekend.
Mm-hmm.
When the Patriots come back home. The other bit of good news to talk about is that Wes Welker did manage to, you know, say some things to members of the media earlier today, by my understanding, and
yep.
that he seemed to give a thumbs up as much as any Patriot player can concerning the condition of his knee.
Well, I think the talking he did today is less significant than the talking he did this past Sunday on the field.
Sure.
Where he got out there and he caught several passes and he looked like the Wes Welker that we're used to seeing out there.
He had 6 for 48 on Sunday.
Yeah, and I mean, he made some good cuts. He acted like Wes Welker acts on a field. He didn't look limited by anything, running around catching the ball. So I thought that was more significant than anything he might have said, you know, verbally. I thought his actions spoke a lot louder, and the fact that he was out there running around seemingly as normal was a good sign. And the mm-hmm. fact that he talked again today so quickly after the fact leads me to think that it's not going to be a problem this week either.
Well, let's, you know, continue to hope so. Last week, and we spent quite a bit of time talking about this yesterday as well, that the relatively healthy scratch of Joey Galloway certainly doesn't bode well for a guy like Galloway. It puts a lot of pressure on a guy like Sam Aiken, and it puts a lot of pressure on the receiving core, period, in case somebody does go down with an injury.
Well, and that's a great transition segue to make there, John, because at practice today there were two players out of the 53-man roster who were missing. One of them was Fred Taylor, who limped off the field against the Ravens the other day. Wasn't really a surprise that he wasn't there. But Randy Moss was the other one who wasn't at practice. So at an already thin or sort of banged-up position, your two top players are sort of not really playing at 100% right now. And we don't know why Moss missed. We'll know later today when the injury report comes out. But you'd have to speculate at this point that it could be a flare-up again of the back injury that caused him some discomfort in the weeks leading up to the last couple of games.
Right.
And
right.
that's not a good sign if that's something that keeps coming back and is a problem for him, because they can't afford, I mean, it was bad enough that they had to miss Welker for as much time as they did, but to have to miss Moss too, that's and like you said, putting pressure on Galloway to perform. He wasn't even active for the Ravens game.
Right, a healthy stretch.
So that puts your offense in a particular bind. I think it's only Wednesday. It's
right,
certainly
right.
Not.
Yeah, and I believe
anything to panic about
this
at this
week
point.
Or two weeks ago, 2 weeks ago when Moss was at missed practice as well during the middle of the week, and he still mm-hmm. came out and played. So
yep.
I guess we won't worry about it unless we see it happen again Thursday and maybe even Friday before they get on the plane. Two other quick notes before we move on here that directly relate, I think, to the Patriots. Number one, Michael Crabtree did sign with San Francisco. But because of that, the New York Jets then responded and arranged for, and basically worked out a trade with Cleveland for Braylon Edwards. So the Patriots will get a chance to see Braylon Edwards later on this season, and we'll dive into that a little bit more later. But right now I want to bring onto the program Mark Johnson, who's the sports director at KOA Radio in Denver, and certainly covers the Denver Broncos full-time out there. Mark, it's great to visit with you again. Sure, thank you for the time this afternoon.
You bet. Happy to do it, John. In fact, I'm joining you from the parking lot in front of Dove Valley right now. So first-hand knowledge of everything that's going on there.
Oh, well, then, by all means, provide the scoop.
Well, I was just running down the Moss stuff you were talking about. So, yeah, you're reciprocating for me.
See, there you go. All right, well, then you have to share likewise. I got to tell you, it's certainly a great story, I think, to see Denver rebound the way that they have. They've started out a heck of a lot better than a lot of people give them credit for. People here in the East certainly look at Josh McDaniels very fondly as being a sort of a Boykin wonder, if you will, being a true Bill Belichick protege. And I think they're happy for Josh himself that he's gotten off his NFL career to as good a coaching start as he has. So the first question I would have for you then is, what about Josh has turned around maybe the mental aspect, if not the physical aspect, of this football team?
You know, John, it's interesting because everyone's well aware of all that went down when he first got here with the Jay Cutler situation and then the Brandon Marshall situation. And so, you know, he comes in here and immediately shakes the place up. And, you know, you expect that to some degree from a new coach. But and then when he walks in here with, you know, his relative youth, people were thinking, what in the world is going on here? I've been real impressed with the steadiness of Josh McDaniels. And that's something, quite frankly, not knowing him at all, I didn't expect from him, with his youth coming in here and being able to do what he has done, making changes, sending an apparent franchise quarterback out of here in exchange, getting Kyle Orton in from the Chicago Bears, and then kind of going nose to nose, if you will, with Brandon Marshall over the course of, well, really about 3-4 months. And that it seems as though that situation has kind of, you know, come to a close now. But I've just been impressed with the steadiness. And talking with the folks I know inside the Broncos organization, that's the same thing they've said. So even when it got tumultuous outside of Dove Valley and fans are, you know, gnashing of teeth and wringing of hands, he stayed very steady inside. And that's really kind of, I think, directed this team to this great start they've had so far.
Mark, I think
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, John. Go ahead.
I'm just going to say, in along those lines of some of the tough situations that he had, how do you feel he handled the whole Jay Cutler situation? Did he handle it as well as he could have, or did he step into a pile and somehow, you know, gracefully back out of it properly?
Well, you know, I think you can have differing opinions, and they're all reasonable opinions, I think, on that situation, because you know, we're not always entirely sure what went on behind closed doors when they did have some meetings. I mean, there were reports on, you know, on our end here that, that ultimately there was a meeting with, you know, Josh McDaniels and Jay Cutler, and basically, Cutler was said, was basically told, hey, listen, I'm kind of the boss here, and I'm gonna go the direction we think we need to, which really rankled, obviously, the player reportedly, his feelings, and so depending on how accurate any of those things are, I think he handled it relatively well, and obviously on the back end, coming out the other end of this thing, you feel real good about it. But boy, there was a period of time when you know, this thing seemed to be turned upside down, and as steady as things had been for such a long time with Mike Shanahan as coach, that was just not something that was sitting very well, you know, in Broncos Nation, if you will. And so, at the time, I'm not sure if you can handle that situation terribly gracefully. I mean, if you're going to go nose to nose with your franchise quarterback and ultimately send him out of town, I don't know how you do it gracefully, but, the exit certainly was graceful, and it's turned out to, I think, work quite well for the franchise.
And Mark, you mentioned the Brandon Marshall situation and how that seems to have been quelled somewhat. You see the game the other day against Dallas. Marshall has that phenomenal touchdown. He comes running off the field and embraces McDaniels, and the two of them look like they're, you know, they've put all their differences aside. Was that just the emotion of that particular play, or do you really feel like Marshall is on board with what McDaniels is preaching out there?
Well, I think Brandon is on board, and the reason I say that is because, you know, I've got an 18-year-old son, and sometimes he might not totally like what I'm saying all the time, but eventually he's going to figure out that I'm the one that's in control, and so he's going to have to acquiesce a little bit to what Dad says. Mm-hmm. I almost sense that there's a little bit of that situation going on here where, you know, Brandon saw what happened with Jay Cutler's situation. Now, whether that was Jay's aim or not to get himself out of town, it worked for him in that regard. Brandon's situation, it didn't appear there was any real opportunity for him to go elsewhere and end up with another team like Jay Cutler did. So I think he realized, listen, there's only one way I can get through this thing and come out of this thing on the other end, whether it be a new contract with the Denver Broncos or end up someplace else at the end of his deal here with Denver. He realized there was only one way this was going to work out, and that's eventually to fall in line and be part of this team and do what Josh McDaniels, you know, wants as the head coach. And so I think Brandon Marshall eventually kind of fell in line. And, you know, it's a good thing for Denver because there aren't many guys with the kind of physical skill, you know, that he brings to the table. Obviously, you guys have one there in Randy Moss, but there are not a lot of those guys around. And so it's good for the team. He did eventually fall in line, but I think that's what happened. I think he finally got in lockstep with everybody else and realized this guy's in control. I guess they're going to have to do it his way.
Did it take other guys on this team to, as you say, fall in lockstep with Josh, or was it easy for them to do, do you think?
I think in large part, it seemed as though, you know, guys kind of eventually or very quickly fell in line with what he was trying to deal. And, you know, he might have come in with relative youth when you're talking about a head coach in the National Football League, obviously at 32 years of age when he got the job. However, he came with great cachet and a great resume, obviously, with what he was involved with Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots. So I think guys saw, number one, what kind of guy he is, number two, what kind of coaching staff he put together. And then when you look at some of the players that he went out and got, the Brian Dawkins of the world and very high-character guys like that, I think the guys that were left over in this roster looked at it and said, you know what, I think he's trying to do it the right way. You know, maybe I should get on board this thing, and it looks like it might be successful.
So, in other words, some of that, I guess some of the Patriot philosophy seems to be wearing off, and at least to this point in time, through 4 weeks, you'd have to say it's working a little bit in Denver.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. And you know, and that's one thing around here. You frequently hear that when a coach comes in, when they come from a successful situation, whether it be in college or pro, you hear references to their previous stop. And certainly there was a number of times you heard that phrase, the Patriot way, if you will, here in Denver. And I think for a while, you know, the newness of it all, people were wondering, well, what does that mean and how? What does that have to do with what's happening in, you know, Denver, Colorado? But I think as this thing has begun to unfold, you know, they begin to understand a little bit, and obviously you can't argue with what Bill Belichick has done there. And if Josh McDaniels is learning at the knee of Bill Belichick, he certainly obviously comes from a place that they've done it the right way. And so, it's all worked out quite well to this point. Now the schedule certainly has helped out a little bit, you know, those first 3 weeks prior to the Dallas game. But everything right, believe me, everything is rosy and sunny here at Dove Valley right now.
Well, it seems like, Mark, that the perception outside of Denver, at least, is that, yes, the Broncos are 4-0, but it's kind of a soft 4-0, and that they might be, you know, playing with some smoke and mirrors there. What's the feeling among Bronco fans? Are they, obviously they're happy that the team's 4-0, but are they buying the fact that this is a legitimate contender at 4-0?
Well, you know the way it works with fans. I mean, if your team's successful, you're ecstatic, and whoever's running it's a genius, you know, generally speaking. I think, you know, the more cautious of fans and then maybe more objective media folks, maybe those first 3 weeks looked at it and said, well, you know, Cincinnati, we don't know. They didn't play very well in that opening game. I think they've got a high potent offense, but they didn't seem to do much in that contest. Then it was Cleveland, and then as it rolled through that first part of that schedule, everyone kind of wondered about the softness of it. But the thought was, well, the Dallas Cowboys have come rolling in here. Now we'll get a true sense of what this team is all about. I do think the Dallas has, you know, got some dysfunctional nature to it as well. But it is a very talented football team. That's unquestioned. And the one thing I think from Broncos fans' perspective, even if they think those first three games against Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Oakland were soft, they realize, though, that this defense that Josh McDaniels is putting on the field under Mike Nolan's direction as a defensive coordinator looks to be, at this point, a pretty darn good defense. Now, is it the number one defense in the NFL? I'm not sure we can say that, but it looks to be a much improved defense from a year ago. So everyone's believing in that. Kyle Orton has played flawless football. He has not thrown an interception yet to this point, and so they like the efficiency, although it might not be overly exciting at different times, but it is a very efficient offense at this point in time. And, you know, as long as they continue to have success with it, everyone's going to be very happy.
And they don't have a quarterback complaining that the coach might be sniffing around and looking at other quarterbacks.
No, that's for sure. And, you know, you begin to understand after you watch, and I know I've got friends up in Chicago, and, you know, they complain and whine about, you know, Kyle Orton is this and Kyle Orton is that. And believe me, when the comparison is made from a physical standpoint between Jay Cutler and Kyle Orton, well, there's not much of a comparison. I mean, we know the physical attributes that Jay Cutler brings to the table. Kyle Orton does not bring those same kind of, you know, physical skill sets, if you will, to the table. However, what he does do, which he did in Chicago, he's a guy that throws the ball very accurately. He's a guy that generally makes very good decisions. And he's the guy that's going to find the open man, which is what he's done here. And they continue to have success. Now, they haven't put up enormous numbers. But with that defense, if it continues to play at that level, they're not going to have to put up enormous numbers. As long as Kyle Orton continues to play smart and that's an efficient offense, this team will have some nice success. And being in the AFC West right now, which you've got, you know, I kind of joke all the time between Oakland and Kansas City. I'm not sure which one is the bigger dumpster fire at this point in time. And San Diego, which is a talented football team, but, you know, that window for that team starting to close a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, they might, if the Broncos continue to play the way they have been and be an efficient football team, they might be able to, you know, play right there with the Chargers atop that division, maybe sneaking out by the end of the season.
Mark Johnson is the sports director at KOA Radio in Denver, joining us here inside the Playbook. John Rook and Eric Scalavino here today. You mentioned, Mark, this team may or may not be the number one ranked defense in the league, yet statistically right now through 4 weeks it is.
Sure.
What about their play has surprised you?
Well, you know, last year, Johnny, you know, this was the 29th ranked defense in the NFL. It was awful. They couldn't force turnovers. It was not a group that played well together. This year under Mike Nolan, they've changed the scheme, obviously gone to more of the 3-4 set. Last year, I'm not sure what the scheme was, quite frankly. They were 4-3 at one point, switched over to 3-4, then went back to 4-3. It was really a mess. And so they've come in here. I don't think anybody ever questions the credentials of Mike Nolan as the defensive coordinator. The guy, every place he's at, they seem to improve dramatically. They've come in. In fact, I just did an interview a little while ago here with Andre Davis, the linebacker, and we talked about it. He said it's a cohesive unit. We believe in what the system. We believe in what other guys are doing. We're playing with each other. You know, it also doesn't help or doesn't hurt that much when you got what might be one of the better secondaries in the National Football League, you know, back there as well with Ronaldo Hill and Andre Goodman, Champ Bailey, and Brian Dawkins. I mean, those guys have been phenomenal on the back end. So it's a defense that plays with great energy. They're forcing turnovers right now. They've been great against the run, and they're having a lot of fun doing it. A lot of times when you see defenses playing like that, they'll have a lot of success.
Right. Surprised at how much the Cowboys decided to throw at Champ Bailey?
Yeah, I think everyone is. You know, that's just been something. You get to those, you see those guys in the NFL. Deion Sanders is one of those guys. People just stop throwing at him. And last year when you watched this team, you never saw anybody throw over towards Champ Bailey. Unless they're ultimately forced to. And to see them throw over there in double-digit attempts against Champ Bailey was stunning to me. And, you know, when, on those rare occasions when it does happen, it seems as though even though he is, you know, maybe on the, you know, getting towards the back end of a career into his 30s now as a quarterback, he stepped up and showed exactly why he's considered one of the top two or three cornerbacks in the National Football League. He was outstanding and, you know, got the interception, obviously, as well against the Cowboys.
All right, then let's flip it to the other side of the football, because what I noticed, I was just watching a short while ago on NFL Replay, Mark, that To me, Denver at least looked at least somewhat similar to the Denver team on offense that we've seen in the last few years. In fact, where, you know, certainly you like to, you know, use a stable of running backs and run it up the middle on people, and obviously we're familiar with Lamont Jordan. And yet, you know, it seems that Josh McDaniels still wants to put his twist, his some of his mark on this team offensively. What have you noticed, and what have the players responded to in terms of how this playbook may be different and how it may be different in a better sense?
Well, it's a little different in that a lot of what they did here under Mike Shanahan in the latter years, you know, really relied upon Jay Cutler. I mean, there was a thought that Mike Shanahan really thought that he had found, you know, the second coming of John Elway. He loved the talent that Jay Cutler had, and so everything was based upon what Cutler was able to do. Now, I think we're seeing Jay make some smarter decisions now as a starter. As he gets a little bit older as a quarterback with the Bears than maybe he made here with the Broncos. There were times he would dazzle you. There were times you'd be scratching your head and think, what in the world did I just see, and why would you possibly make that pass? I mean, you go back to that left-handed pass he had was a year or two ago against Kansas City. So what you see with this offense, I think, is a little bit more controlled offense, a little bit more disciplined offense in that regard. And part of that, I think, is the system, obviously. Part of it, I think, is the skill set that Kyle Orton brings to the table. And you know, you still got the great complement of receivers out there. Brandon Marshall, when he is on board, he can be spectacular. Eddie Royal had over 90 receptions a year ago. He's a guy that can be a lot of fun to watch. Mm-hmm. Brandon Stokely is Mr. Steady out there as well. So you've got some nice pieces. Daniel Graham, of course, who Pats fans remember as a tight end on the team, and he's back in his home state of Colorado. And so you've got weapons out there that they can go to at any different time. And you know, you mentioned Lamont Jordan and Carell Buchholder, who might be banged up for this weekend, and obviously no Sean Moreno, the outstanding rookie out of Georgia that they picked up in the first round. So there are a lot of weapons out there that Kyle Orton can go to. It's just, it's not as explosive in terms of really stretching the field, you know, like they used to be. That used to be Cutler's deal, and he was looking downfield, let's go for the, you know, 50-yarder every single time out. But it's not the same kind of offense in that regard, but you've got the same weapons out there, just a little bit more under control, I think.
Mark, one of the things Mike Shanahan's teams were known for was excellent offensive line play. They were smaller than the average NFL lineman, but they seemed to be taught expertly on how to block, pass protect, run blocking, and all that. How does this current line under McDaniels sort of compare to the great lines under Shanahan?
Well, I think if you look talent for talent, you've got a few bigger guys, as you mentioned. Mike's lines are always considered to be a little bit undersized in the NFL. Ryan Clady on the left side is one of the great young tackles in the National Football League. And, of course, he's a, you know, just a monster of a human being, highly talented. He's out of Boise State. And you got Ryan Harris on the other side, who is also very good at the right tackle. So I think you've got a couple of very young bookend tackles on this team that are going to be there for the next decade. So you feel real good about that. Casey Wegman's a veteran center inside. Matt Hamilton has been dinged up a little bit as that one guard. Chris Cooper is in what is fourth year now out of North Dakota. Is another guy they think very highly of. And so from a talent standpoint, they feel real good. And Kyle Orton has not been running for his life. He's not been sacked a great deal. They have done a good job in protection, and obviously they've run the ball quite well with the stable of running backs we talked about. So that line, I think, has played very well. And there's, other than Wegman and Hamilton, who are both getting on in their careers, those other three guys are all very young. And you think, well, we got a good foundation here for the Denver Broncos for the next, 8, 9, 10 years.
By the way, can we have Jabbar Gaffney back?
Well, you know, it may cost you, but we can work out a deal there, John, I think.
How about just you and I work that deal out? You think they'd let us do that?
I'm not sure Coach Belichick or McDaniels would accept that deal when we're done with it.
Just to let you know, we miss him around here now. So, can you give us any kind of an update on Carell Buchholder?
Well, not really. As you guys well know, the injury information coming out of the Patriots can be tough to come by at times. Sure. And that's been another thing, by the way, that here in the Mile High City has been very tough to get used to. Mike Shanahan was always very open about injury stuff. And now you get that, lower extremity doubtful, a response when you ask about injuries. And so at this point, Josh McDaniels did say yesterday was the last time that I heard anything from him when he said right now it's questionable that we're going to see him this weekend. He's still a little bit dinged up. So my guess is there's a good chance he will not play, which means more of no Sean Moreno. And by the way, guys, and that was a bit of a controversial pick when they took, with all the deficiencies they had on the defensive side of the ball, everyone expected that first pick in the first round that the Broncos had to be a defensive guy to go out and take a running back. And there was a lot of head scratching going on there as well, but he has turned out to be a dynamic talent after getting his knee dinged up, you know, in the preseason.
Absolutely. Well, Mark, we sure appreciate the insight, you know, into the Broncos, as I know you're right on top of things as you normally are out there, and I think that most everybody is, you know, anticipating this to be maybe a little bit better game than we thought it would be 2 weeks ago or so. Are you tending to sort of go along with that assessment?
Well, I think so, and you know, there might be those around that you know have watched the Patriots a little bit, and maybe they haven't been as explosive as maybe people thought they were going to be. But
right.
I tell you what, what's that old financial line? Past success or past success doesn't you know mean future success.
Yeah. Past performance is not indicative of future results.
There you go. Well, you know what? When it comes to what the Patriots have done, and the fact that you still got Tom Brady back to pulling the trigger, I think that's still a very, very good team, and will be right there at the end when we're talking about the best team in the AFC. And so coming into this season, I looked at that game and thought, boy, yeah, that one might get a little bit ugly. But the way this defense has played, and as stout as they have been and as few points as they have given up, I feel real good about the way that team is playing right now. And that offense, like I said, is just efficient enough. And so now I'm looking forward to this game because, you know, as talented as Dallas is, as I said earlier, they've got some dysfunctionality to that franchise a little bit. So I'm interested to see what this Broncos team does against, you know, the machine that has been the New England Patriots in recent years as they come in here on Sunday. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. In fact, I think some questions will be answered on Sunday about exactly where Denver is after this contest.
Hey, I would agree with that.
Yeah. Mark, you said earlier in the show that all is sunny and bright out in Dove Valley, but we know in New England the weather can change on a dime, and it's not unusual for it to snow in October out in the Rockies. Any forecast that you've heard of for this Sunday?
Yeah, in fact, it's funny you should ask that. Yeah, I was just talking with another reporter here at Dove Valley, and yeah, they're talking about having, you know, cold weather, maybe some precipitation, maybe some snow here in Denver this weekend. Of course, not only is Sunday New England in town against the Broncos, but this potentially could be game four, the NLDS at Coors Field between the Phillies and the Rockies as well. So, yeah, we could have a couple of big sporting events on Sunday and have maybe some ugly weather roll in here this weekend.
Nice. That's what I'm looking for.
We love that.
As long as it doesn't affect our flight out, that's the only thing.
Well, it's about sunny and 65 right now, but, again, that may change by this weekend.
Unbelievable. Mark, thanks again for the time today. Appreciate it, and continued success to you.
All right, Jeff. Good to see you in Morgantown, by the way.
Hey, you too. Thanks, buddy. We'll run into each other soon on the trail, I'm sure.
Take care,
thanks. It's Mark Johnson, who again is the sports director at KOA Radio in Denver. And, yeah, we did run into each other in Morgantown last week, Eric, because he's the voice of the Colorado Buffs.
Nice.
I was doing the national broadcast for the Colorado-West Virginia game last week. So.
And that was a good one, it looked like.
Yeah, it actually turned out to be a better game than we originally thought it would be. So that was good because Colorado is not very strong this year. And West Virginia fumbled the ball four times in the first half to make things close. You know, I don't know what kind of impression that you're left with in terms of Denver right now. I mean, certainly they seem to be doing it a little bit with mirrors, not so much smoke, but maybe mirrors right now. And you have to consider who they've played in the opening 4 weeks. But the fact is, and you know, we could have gotten into a little bit more detail with Mark, but, you know, you spend 20 minutes with a guy, you don't want to, and he's always agreed to come back, you don't want to milk it too much here. Fact is that they've given up 7, 6, 3, and 10, respectively,
yep.
Points. You know, in the 4 weeks they've played. And I don't care who you're playing, even if it is Little Sisters of the Poor. In the NFL, that's extraordinarily solid.
It is. And I think a good comparison could be made to this New England defense, where they've given up the defense itself, not the team as a whole, but the defense has given up 17, 16, 10, and now 14 points in their first four games. You take away the two Tom Brady turnovers that led to directly to touchdowns by the opposing defenses.
Right.
And those are pretty good numbers too. So, and you know, a lot of people are saying, well, you know, they've it's the same kind of thing. They've it's situational football where they haven't been able to, you know, but they've played better teams, I think, than Denver has. And to give up not many more points than Denver's point total speaks pretty well for them too. I'm a little bit more confident in New England's defense only because, like I said, they've played better teams and have done it against better teams so far than the Broncos have. But sure, you can't argue with the facts. The Broncos are holding teams to a low amount of points. It's the interesting matchup is this week, obviously, because you've got the teams that are so familiar with each other. especially not just on the coaching side, but on the field. Half of the players on offense, although some of them are, you know, in reserve roles, they have a knowledge of what this team does. And I don't think that can be underestimated, because even in his press conference today, Tom Brady admitted to the fact that when they played the Jets in week two, they had to change a lot of things because of the Kevin O'Connell factor. And he was, you know, he was activated for that game. He was the third quarterback. He was a captain for that particular week at the coin toss. But it affected the game plan of the Patriots. They went out and they did the whole grease board and the flip cards on the arms and everything. So I don't think that can be underestimated going into a game like this, where there's even more familiarity from the head coach on down to the reserve, you know, linemen.
So when you stop and think about it, then do you feel like, you know, Coach Belichick then might decide to, you know, try to throw a few little, you know, wrinkles into the mix in anticipation that, you know, Josh is going to kind of know what to expect?
Well, I think you're going to see wrinkles on both sides of the ball, because I think both sides feel like they have an intimate knowledge of the other in one way or another. Obviously, Belichick knows everything there is to know about McDaniels and his coaching style. And, you know, there will be things that Josh will have to try to do to try to one-up that. And obviously, Josh has a knowledge of all the players on this team and their strengths and weaknesses and their tendencies. And he's going to try to tell his players how to exploit them when they're on the field. And so I think it's going to be an interesting matchup, because, like I said, in the first 4 weeks, you've had teams that, you know, aren't in that situation of being so familiar with one another. And the Broncos have been able to succeed. The Patriots, likewise, have done fairly well holding up, you know, opposing offenses that have been pretty potent to low point totals. But this week, I think it's going to be interesting to watch, because you're going to see, I think, a lot of different things on both sides of the ball, and it'll be interesting who can make the adjustments better. And whichever team does that is going to be the team that ultimately wins.
Sure. I mean, I think it all comes down to execution and, you know, which team's players are going to be able to carry out the game plan better than the other team's players. I mean, and that's usually what happens when you have two teams of relatively equal ability. It all comes down to execution and, obviously, you know, the basics of the game, which are, you know, turnovers and special teams, and whether or not you can limit them or force the other team into them. And to me, this, just on paper, has the makings of being that kind of game, because you're going to have what will end up being potentially a supreme chess match between the master and the protege.
Right. Indeed. And I think that's what makes this so much more intriguing. And I think you can throw the point totals on defense out the window this week.
No kidding? You think this will be high scoring?
I think it will be high scoring, because I think that both sides are going to be trying so many different things that it's going to be it's going to be a case where last year Miami comes in here with an entire new wrinkle called the Wildcat, and had a distinct advantage over the Patriots defense, because they had no clue that was coming, and they had no way to stop it, and they even their adjustments couldn't really do much against it. I mean, I don't know if you'll see something on that scale, but I think the potential exists where there could be so much adjusting to try to, you know, think and overthink and use reverse psychology and, well, they know I do this, so let's not do this, and maybe we should. That I think you're gonna see a lot of breakdowns where normally you wouldn't, because there's going to be a lot of overthinking involved and scheming, and I think that usually benefits the offense.
Well, I would say also that if for the Patriots to, you know, make certain that they can come out of Denver with a win, especially if the weather conditions are, shall we say, inclement, they have to stop Denver's running game. And, you know, Denver still has, you know, faces may change, but the philosophy, what I was getting at in some of the conversation with Mark there, is that the philosophy hasn't really changed a lot. They like to shuttle backs in there, and they have a good 2-3-4-back system. Mm-hmm. And depending on Buckhalter's, you know, health and his status, you know, they're still doing that. And Denver got some good size chunks of yardage against the Dallas defense this last weekend, helped them control the clock, helped keep the ball out of Tony Romo's hands. It also helped that Tony Romo shot himself in the foot a lot this last weekend. Figuratively, of course, but the fact is, you know, they held Dallas to just 10 points, only scored 17 themselves because they used some ball control, so they clearly can do that.
It's amazing how many similarities there are between these two teams on both sides of the ball. You mentioned, you know, on offense, there's that running back by committee that they keep shuffling different backs in there. Well, the same thing is here in New England. They have a talented, albeit younger, big play wide receiver in Brandon Marshall. We have Randy Moss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have the only difference is we have the former Super Bowl and NFL MVP at quarterback. They have Kyle Orton. I think the lines are very, very similar in that they're, you know, they may not overwhelm you, but they're steady and they're consistent. As you know, Mark was talking about, they have some what they think are the bookends at the tackles, who are young, and they have a defense that has a lot of new players, a lot of a new scheme with Mike Nolan coming in there, and they're doing well, but they're still sort of trying to find themselves and their identity. It's pretty incredible that there's so many similarities between these two teams. Whereas looking at it going into the year, it looked like New England was going to have the clear advantage in every way. At least that's how I looked at it going into the season. And now they're pretty much they're pretty even, you know, record wise, things that are going on the field. Obviously, the advantages are the quarterback and the coach. New England has a distinct advantage in both of those categories, and you know if you have the advantage in those categories, chances are you're going to win.
Well, this is a game, you know, that frankly I think before the season started, Patriots fans circled as being a potential win, even though historically it's been very difficult for the Patriots to play well and win, you know, in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I certainly give the Broncos a lot of credit for the start that they've had. My guess is with a 4-0 start, unless somehow, you know, things just start shutting down on them and injuries start, you know, taking their toll, they'll probably be right there, potentially, you know, in the AFC West toward the end of the year, thanks to San Diego, you know, and they're, you know, flip-flopping. And by the way, just another, you know, thing I saw on the news wires earlier today, we're talking about some of the news of the day earlier this hour, A.J. Smith is, you know, his hair is standing on the back of his neck. And so it sounds to me like he's starting to get a little bit antsy over the performance of Norv Turner. Big surprise there, huh?
Yeah.
And then on top of that, though, unless he does something relatively soon, he could very well be, you know, trying to save his own job. And I don't even know if his job would be savable. And I bring up A.J. Smith because he's a native New Englander. He's from Rhode Island, and he went to, you know, Hendricken and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's a guy that local football fans here certainly would have to, you know the name and be somewhat familiar with because he's got a New England background.
Sure.
And, you know, he's feeling the heat for, you know, the Chargers somewhat underachieving in a situation where people thought San Diego would run away with this division and perhaps end up with the best record overall in the league this year.
Yeah, I think Denver is lucky that, you know, McDaniels is lucky that he's in the situation he's in, because by default he could end up winning that division. You have Oakland, who's proven themselves to be, once again, one of the most horrendous teams you've ever seen. Kansas City is not getting it done with all the changes they've made this year. And San Diego is sort of a Jekyll and Hyde team. You never know what you're going to get each week with them. So, you know, Denver at 4-0 right now, they're in a great position to win that division. And, you know, depending on how things shake out with the other divisions, they could end up having, you know, one of the better records in the league.
Sure they could. Sure they could. You got to consider the competition. I mean, you know, they've got, you know, double doses of, you know, the Raiders and the Chiefs and obviously San Diego. And so, you know, you split with San Diego and you sweep the others, you're in pretty good shape.
Which is even more important for New England to go in there and get a win this weekend, because if it comes down to tiebreakers,
it's head-to-head,
and you know, you'd rather have them come here in the playoffs than have to go out there.
No question. By the way, I wanted to let you know that Brent in Illinois sent an email, and he said, Eric, Mike Reese from ESPN Boston, he said Moss was in the locker room today and looked fine, that he thought it might just be an off day. Does that really happen?
Well, it happens in training camp, certainly. I'd be very surprised if it's a middle of the season, just random veteran off day. I haven't really seen that during the regular season since I've been covering this team. Only in training camp do they get that kind of treatment. I mean, that's why I have to think that there might be something. You know, we've seen a lot of guys go through the locker room and not be at practice that particular day. When Julian Edelman was out during preseason, we'd see him quite frequently walking through the locker room, and he didn't appear to have anything wrong with him. He wasn't walking with a limp or anything, but he didn't play, and he didn't practice during those times. So, you know, to just base it off of a quick look at a guy walking through the locker room is tough to do with this team, because that's usually not indicative of anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be very surprised if they just said, oh, yeah, take the day off. That's not something I've seen them do during the regular season, unless there's something legitimate that warrants it.
By the way, Patriots superfan Bill just sent this note. He says, do you guys know how many coaches or coaching assistants that worked under Bill Belichick have moved on to other teams and have beaten Bill with their new team?
Well, that's a good trivia question.
I've actually put a call into Patriots Media Relations, and I'm working on getting the answer to that question.
Okay, good. I mean, right off the top of my head, you'd have to say, you know...
Mangini did it.
Mangini last year,
yeah.
Right?
And the year before.
We might need some clarification. Are we talking about the first time that they faced, you know, the Patriots?
Yeah, or all time.
You'd have to think that eventually you're going to beat him. Eventually.
Sure.
It just wouldn't happen in theory often, right?
Sure. Yeah. It's a good trivia question either way. I think the odds are better on an all-time record-wise that you'll find coaches who've had victories over Belichick. But in their first meeting,
I'm pretty sure with the first meeting that it's pretty difficult for the protege to beat the master.
I think so too. I'm
just trying to think right off the top of my head now, and I'd have to go back and look at the coaching roster of assistants who have worked under Belichick in the 10 years now that he's been in New England.
Right. Well, Weiss went to college.
Yeah.
Cornell went to Cleveland, and in their first meeting together, New England
won
that.
Yeah, right.
So. The first time they faced Mangini, they beat him.
Yep.
My
guess is the first time that he's faced, proteges, he's won them all.
Yeah, and there haven't been that many that have left. I mean, like I said, Weiss, since he's been in New England, he's had Weiss and Cornell in the beginning, and Weiss went to Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
Cornell went to Cleveland. That's out. Mangini followed shortly thereafter, and they beat him. I mean,
yeah,
there are other distances. There are other ones like Jim Schwartz.
Yeah, but
was
they
an
didn't
assistant,
go,
but they didn't
move
go
on to take. They didn't move on to take
right.
coaching jobs.
Exactly.
They took other assistants positions.
Exactly.
And, whether or not they might have been like a player control, personnel person,
right.
and they moved up to, say, quarterback's coach, or they might have been an offensive assistant and they moved up to wide receiver coach someplace, else.
Right.
In other words, they've kind of tried to climb the coaching ladder, but they might have begun here in New England.
Right. So, yeah, there's not a whole lot of precedent for Belichick facing an opponent who used to be an assistant for him.
I don't think so. I don't think that there's a W, but we'll see if we can get some definitive answer. That's actually a good question, Bill. So, good stuff. So, what we'll do then here coming up in just a couple of moments, we'll get a timeout in here, and then we're going to let you listen into Josh McDaniels' conference call with members of the Patriots media. Obviously, these are people now that are very familiar with Coach McDaniels, having served as quarterbacks coach and offensive coordinator under Coach Belichick during his time here as he kind of begun his professional coaching career. And now that he's moved on as a head coach and running his own team, I'm sure that the line of questioning will be interesting, to say the least. And we'll see how much, the protege has learned from the master in a little bit. So we're going to let you listen in to that conference call with Josh McDaniels. We also have Vic Carucci, the senior editor of NFL.com, who's slated to join us in hour number two as well. And we'll continue with your emails. Webradio@patriots.com is how you reach us. 508-543-7482. That's our telephone number if you'd like to give us a call as well. And we'll continue with more in just a moment inside Patriots Playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
We're pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com radio.
At American Airlines, we know it seems like you're on the road almost as much as your favorite sports team. We know you've scheduled a business trip to a city where your team happens to be playing that night. And we know that on every trip, you inevitably forget to bring a toothbrush, but you never forget that old pair of socks you wear on game day to bring your team luck. We know for you, it's not just a seat on a flight to a place. It's a seat on a flight to your life. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Okay, so to recap, these are last year's sales results, and here's how we stand now. I need some clutch players who can get us some numbers up on the board. Ted.
Yes, sir.
In the fourth quarter.
Fourth quarter.
We've come from behind in the fourth quarter before. Ted,
what?
I need you here in the shotgun. Put on this helmet.
It's a garbage can.
Do it.
But it's dark in here.
Susan!
Yes?
What? You're going to reverse right and then break left at the cubicle.
What?
I am?
Let's go!
Mr. Krevelin?
That was awkward.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
What?
You can take the trash can off now.
What?
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services and Bank of America, NA member FDIC, copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
Hello?
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Now, is this MC Hammer or is this Rick James?
That's what I want to know.
Oh, okay, Rick James, thank you. All right. I was about to say, if you pull an MC Hammer on me, I'm never speaking to you again.
Can't stop the hammer.
Can't stop the hammer. Oh, it's good stuff. Absolutely classic. Hard to believe that MC Hammer is classic now, huh? Welcome back. It's hour number two inside the playbook for a Wednesday. Hump Day Wednesday as we count it down to Sunday afternoon. Patriots are back out on the road this week as they will play at Invesco Field at Mile High and take on the Denver Broncos, led by former Patriot offensive coordinator and Bill Belichick protege Josh McDaniels at the helm. So that's coming up this Sunday. Let's jump in a couple of emails here, and then as we mentioned just a few moments ago, we'll let you listen in to Josh McDaniels' press conference with members of the Patriots media from earlier today at Gillette Stadium. And again, what we like to do with these conference calls is play them for you in their entirety. Where you can hear the line of questioning, you can hear the follow-ups. It's not, you know, cut up into bits and pieces where you only get a chance to hear responses and sound bites and things like that, because sometimes you have to understand the line of questioning and you have to hear the entire response in order to get a full picture of what maybe the intent really is. And that, of course, is the advantage that we have here at Patriots.com that you might not get elsewhere in being able to play some of these things in their entirety for you so you can kind of hear it all and see if you can play guess the reporter from the line of questioning as well, especially those of you who are from the area and know who the beat people are for the Patriots. You'll be able to get a pretty good idea. When was that again?
That was a couple weeks ago on a Belichick conference call.
Yeah. And somebody, the thing that galls me is that not only does it happen, you know, in the most inopportune times like that, where it infringes on everybody else's, you know, ability to do their jobs, But how people can be so callous and so unthinking about, you know, not putting their phones on buzz, you know, when you're, you know, in the church or, you know, you're, you know, when it's quiet or, you know, when you're trying to enjoy a movie. I mean, are people just that clueless?
You guys, get us a little quiet over here. Yeah. Thanks.
No kidding. Can we keep the cell phone quiet over here? I mean, you know, hello, people. Wouldn't you want to check it? That's why my phone is on permanent buzz. Okay, ringtones, forget about it. It doesn't exist anymore with me. It's on permanent vibrate because, you know, I'd have to change it so many times considering what I do and where I go and people I talk to and everything. I just keep it in my pocket, and so I automatically know, generally speaking, when someone calls because you're going to feel it vibrate in your pocket.
You just like, you know, the vibration, don't you?
Yeah, yeah, I knew you were going to say that. God, what a mind you have, huh?
You set me up for it.
Well, it's probably either going to be you or Andy, one or the other. So,
and he's not here, so you're stuck with me.
I guess that's probably true. It just never ceases to amaze me, though, the people that just don't think about, you know, common courtesy, things like that. That's one of my pet peeves, and I guess we'd have to, you know, go with that one today for a pet peeve situation. All right, webradio@patriots.com is how you reach us here on the show, 508-543-7482. If you have questions on the Broncos, questions on the Patriots, team preparations, things along those lines, we'll jump in on tomorrow's show more along the lines of predictions and the like, but if you have some early thoughts on the game, fire away and share with us. Let me see what we have. We've got a couple to share. We had asked earlier when Eric was with us, about free agent running backs, because I thought that this team now, that I'm ready to completely and totally punt on the Lawrence Maroney experiment, I thought this team needed to think running back, put it really right at the top of the list. If not one, then maybe 1A somewhere, you know, in the early rounds of the draft this next year if an opportunity presented itself. And, of course, depending upon, you know, what kind of the quality of class running backs there would be coming out. And Eric said, well, maybe free agency would be the way to go. And so we got an email here from Todd in Jacksonville. Thank you, Todd, who says, here's a list of free agent running backs for 2010 with their age. And he says Ronnie Brown, which I think would be attractive. He's 27 years old, so he's certainly got some life left in his legs. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I'm not convinced, though, that Miami would be willing to let him, you know, go, you know, lock, stock, and barrel, but Ronnie Brown is at the top of the list. I think he would certainly be attractive. Lendale White might be another possibility. Jarius Norwood, Darren Sproles, Willie Parker, Leon Washington, Cadillac Williams, and now that he seems to have bounced back a bit from his knee injury, he might be one of those guys that a guy like Bill Belichick would take a shot on, and Jerome Harrison, and then an unrestricted free agent, and the most intriguing, he says, is Pierre Thomas. Out of these running backs, I am intrigued by Leon Washington, Ronnie Brown, Cadillac Williams, and Darren Sproles. Not sure if the Pats would be able to get any of these guys considering the Pats' value system and the fact that 2010 is probably going to be an uncapped year. This will probably cause ridiculous bidding wars, which the Pats historically don't get into. However, who do you think the Pats could potentially get, and who would be a good fit for the Pats' offense? That's good work by you, Todd. So we'll give you full credit for that. You know, you also bring up a very important point, that if 2010 is an uncapped year, which it could very well be, and again, we really don't know, and we may not know until, you know, this season continues to progress and we find out how quickly things can pick up in the bargaining between players and owners after this season's completed and whether or not they're even able to get anything accomplished while the season's going on. I hope so, because I hope that they can see, you know, with the popularity of the league and the way the TV ratings are just going through the roof again, and I mean, you know, clearly, America loves the NFL, and the NFL should love America. And so the players need to see that, the owners need to see that, and there's got to be some common ground. That having been said, you realize that, you know, we'll probably still get uncapped, and I'm sure that a walkout or a lockout will be threatened because the owners need some cost certainty. And the players see, well, you know what, the only thing certain is that we got a hot commodity here, and we want to be paid for it. And you can see both sides of the fence. This is going to be an interesting bargaining, negotiating that will go on.
Straight cash, homie.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Straight cash. That's what the players will be looking for. I got to say, out of those guys, the ones that intrigue me the most, as I mentioned, would be Ronnie Brown. I think Lendale White, because he's a power back, or at least he has been in the past. Cadillac Williams, for the same reason. I would be less thrilled with, you know, unless Willie Parker is, you know, we can find out that his health problems are behind him, and he's also older than any of those other backs I mentioned. He's the oldest at 28. He would be less attractive, as would Leon Washington and Darren Sproles, because they're more of the smaller. I don't think they'd be an every-down kind of back. Now, again, I think we've seen all NFL teams work their way toward having more of a running back by committee situation in offensive backfields. And you're kind of straying away from the one big back, tote the mail kind of guy like the Patriots had with Corey Dillon and historically with some others in the past. If you can find me a compliment to a guy like Darren Sproles, I'm all for it. Who's that going to be, though? I mean, right now you don't have that. Maroney's going to be gone unless somehow something miraculous happens. He's had his shot. He won't be here. Fred Taylor, this is a one-year deal. How much life does he really have in his legs? Kevin Faulk, you can say the same thing about him. God love him. We all love him. He's been one of the most valuable Patriots, you know, over time that this team has had in its history. How much longer does he have? And that leaves you with Sammy Morris. So unless you're convinced that Sammy Morris can certainly be, you know, part of that equation next year, I don't know why you'd go and get a Darren Sproles. It just doesn't make much sense. It sounds to me that you'd want a more physical type of running back, which I think historically the Patriots have tended to like anyway. And I think that centers, frankly, a lot of the disappointment around a guy like Maroney. You know, he's being too fine with his choices. He's just not slamming the hole, and he needs to be able to do that, you know, as it opens up. So I guess, you know, out of those, my wish list would be, you know, Ronnie Brown, Cadillac Williams, and Lendale White. How's that for an order? I think that would suffice. I'd be okay with that. And if they could get one of those three guys to come in along with keeping a guy like Sammy Morris, then I think you'd have a pretty good 1-2 punch in the backfield. Then you certainly have been Jarvis Green-Ellis, who I think, in my own mind, could end up becoming a sort of a replacement for the Kevin Faulk in that mold. I think he could certainly be a Kevin Faulk type of mold, and he could be into the mix as well. And I think the Patriots would be certainly more than adequate at running back if you were able to sort of grow that direction. All right, some food for thought there. And Todd, again, thanks for the email. It's always good that somebody is keeping up on that stuff and can find that stuff. I mean, we could probably find it too, but, you know, hey, we're sitting here trying to do a show, right? Okay, this one comes from Alejandro in Bogota, Colombia. Alejandro, thanks for sending the note, and it's good to hear from you. He says here, all right, I believe the most dreaded sentences in sports are, Brett is having fun. And for more on the Cowboys, let's go to Ed Werder in Valley Ranch. That's pretty good. I like that. For more of the Cowboys, let's go to Ed Werder at Valley Ranch. That's funny. He says, I'm a little late on Tuesday's questions, but I would pick Flacco over Ryan. That's okay. Hey, by the way, just as an aside here, if you're listening to this show by downloading the podcast after the live version and you do have some thoughts and some comments on the questions we asked during the live show, by all means, fire off the email. All I would ask you to do is just when you know, if you are so moved to send us an email and comment on something that is said or that we say here on the program, send it to the web address, webradio@patriots.com. But make sure you put in the subject line for playbook or for John Rook or whatever you like. But just, you know, put for playbook. That way we'll hold on to it, and that way we'll read it during our show. And that way I'll make special effort to get to it as well. All right, he says, I would pick Flacco over Ryan, and that was one of our questions yesterday. If you had a choice of one of the two young quarterbacks, who would you pick, Matt Ryan or Joe Flacco? He says, you know why? On the Ravens' final drive, he looked so calm and composed, and I had that sickening feeling in my gut that he was going to get the touchdown, and I didn't feel the same with Ryan. My question is, did you ever go to the old Mile High Stadium? Was it every bit of the home field advantage the people say it was? I mean, when you have Elway on your team, you do have an advantage. Take care and keep it up, Alejandro. Good question, Alejandro. The answer to that is yes, I did go to the old Mile High. And that was one of those places that, you know, rocked when it got noisy. You could actually, you know, you could actually feel the stadium vibrate like, you know, you can in some of the facilities that are still there. And it was a definitive home field advantage for the Broncos. Now, it doesn't mean that the current Mile High isn't. Invesco Field, it still gets noisy. They still, the fans still jump into it. You'll hear, if you had forgotten, and I'm sure you're still familiar, if you follow the Patriots at all, you know, you've known that in the years that you watch, you know, Bronco games, the fans do have a chant like we do at Gillette, you know, whenever a pass is incomplete, they yell incomplete in unison, and it's pretty loud, and it's also very much together. They do a better job of it than our fans do of doing first down. Maybe it's because they've been doing it a little bit longer, but, you know, first down, you know, for those that don't know the story, and I've told this a couple of times, I think, but don't know the story, this is something that was sort of, we sort of germinated in our minds, myself and Gary Grodecki, who was with the team in the game entertainment mode, probably about 19, when did we decide to do that? I think we started doing it in about 1997 or 8, because I started with the team in 94, and this is my 1993, excuse me, because this is my 17th season. So I started in 93, and I want to say it was about 90, well, it was more like 95 or 96. We tried to do it, and I had to kind of lead people to it, and after doing it for about 6 or 7 years, fans finally caught on to the point where I never had to say first down anymore. That play is good for another Patriots, and fans would go crazy and say first down, and, you know, and thrust their hands thusward, and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So it probably took until about 1998, 1999. It was one of the last couple of years of old Foxborough Stadium. So it would have had to been 99 or 2000. That really is when it started catching on, and our fans started picking it up. It was probably 99. That sounds about right. Seems like we had a year or two in the old stadium before we moved into Gillette in 2001, 2002. So, but the Denver fans do a great job of it. They do a great job of it. You kind of wonder how come, you know, if we get sometimes accused for, you know, cheerleading, how they don't, and maybe they have, you know, been admonished by the NFL or not. I mean, I don't know. What was that, Jason? Okay. I don't know. You know, what the deal is with that, but suffice to say, it does get noisy there, and it's a very, very good home field advantage for the Broncos. And speaking of those Broncos, by the way, let's let you listen into the conference call now that members of Patriots Media had with the brand new head coach of the Denver Broncos earlier today at Gillette, and here's Josh McDaniels.
How are we doing?
Good, Josh.
How are you?
How's it going? I'm doing good. Long time no talk.
Couple of interesting weeks for you there at Denver this season so far, hasn't it?
It has. It's been a lot of fun, and we feel obviously good about the way we started, and you know, but far from satisfied with where we're at so far this year, and excited and looking forward to our preparation here for New England.
You excited about facing Tom again, or for the first time, I guess?
Of course. I think it's a great challenge, and you know, anytime that you can have an opportunity to beat, you know, a team that, you know, we know is as good as they come in the NFL in terms of the organization, the coaching staff, the players, you know, and we know they're going to be well prepared. So we're excited for the challenge, and we'll look forward to the game on Sunday.
You obviously learned a ton underneath Bill Belichick for the years that you were in New England, but what are the things that you didn't realize that you would face as a challenge as a head coach?
I think there's a lot of little decisions that you make on a daily basis that I don't think you really are aware of much when you're assistant. I think your interaction and involvement with every player on your roster is certainly different than what it was when you were just a coordinator on one side of the ball. And the decisions, you know, that your football team needs to make, you know, at every time of the year, on what's best to try to win and to try to get better, you know, ultimately come down to you and, you know, our general manager Brian Zanders and Pat Bowen, and so you know, you're involved in a lot of decisions that I don't think you're really aware of as an assistant.
Hey Josh, if you could go back in time a little bit, I'm wondering how you got from Michigan State to the Patriots. How did that happen?
I worked with Brian Daboll, who was a longtime receivers coach there in New England, and I worked with him at Michigan State, and obviously I had a connection. You know, Bill and Nick had worked together, And, you know, so I went to work for Nick and met Brian, and Brian went to Bill through Nick, I think, and then Brian and I kept in contact, and then, you know, just asked if I'd be interested in an entry-level position, and I certainly was, and that's really how I got up to New England in the first place, and then from there just kind of made my way.
When did you get the feeling that you could be a head coach?
I don't know that you ever really, I mean, you know, ever really have the feeling that you know you can do this or you know that you can do that when you've never done it before. I think that Bill gave me a lot of confidence in terms of the responsibilities that he gave me back there in New England throughout my career there. And, you know, and so when the opportunities were presented, I certainly didn't take that to mean that I was perfectly ready to go. But I went through the process and felt good about my preparation going into that last year and, or, you know, earlier this year after our season ended last year. And, you know, and felt pretty prepared, you know, through what I had learned from Bill and the organization there and Robert Kraft and my agent and the people that could help me with that. So, you know, going through the process, I think, gave me confidence and gave me an understanding that, you know, that I did understand a lot of what it would take. I came from, you know, the best place that I could come from in terms of my upbringing in the NFL and learned from the best people and felt like, you know, I could have an opportunity to make it go on my own somewhere else.
Did you ever have a conversation with Bill where you sat down and he says, I think you can be a head coach, here's what you need to know, here's a plan, here's a hype, anything like that?
You know, Bill's helped me out in many different ways, you know, in terms of my knowledge about the game, in terms of my understanding of some of the things that, you know, you need to do as an organization to be successful. Personally, he's helped me out in personal areas of my life. So there's a lot of things that Bill's helped me with, and I've had a lot of conversations with him, and some of which I'll definitely keep to myself in private. But, you know, he's been the biggest influence on my success, and I'll always be indebted to him.
Have you had much communication with him at all this week or leading up to this game?
I've had a lot of communication with our staff this week. We're working hard to try to beat them this week, and, you know, and so that's where my focus is, and I'm sure that's where Bill's is this week as well.
Uncanny, Josh. Would you believe that he pretty much said the same thing when we asked him that question?
That time difference between the Eastern and Mountain Time is pretty interesting.
How difficult has it been, or do you think it will be, to kind of treat this like any other week and any other game?
I think we understand it's our fifth game, you know, and I think the interesting thing is that there's, you know, it is a little unique in that, you know, I think we know a lot about their personnel, their staff. Obviously, their offense is very similar to the one that we're running here, if not exactly the same in many ways. So there's a lot of similarities. And, you know, I'm so close to being there, you know, last year that I think that's the thing that's going to make it a little different. I think it's exciting to play against a team like that. You don't do this very often in your career, I'm sure, where you play against a team that, you know, at least on one side of the ball, and in many ways our philosophies about how to try to win are going to be exactly the same. So, you know, it'll in many ways maybe like staring in the mirror, but yet our players are totally different, and our defenses are different, and some of the things that we try to do obviously on game day are going to be certainly different. So it'll be a great fun, it'll be a great challenge, and we're all looking forward to it.
Josh, how do you combat all the inside knowledge and familiarity with each other's system?
I think we both change up what we do on a weekly basis. We don't stay the same. So, I mean, they're watching film of us, and they know what we're running, and we're watching film of them, and we know a lot of things they're running. And yet we're going to see some things on Sunday that may be a little different that we've never seen before. But I think ultimately it's going to come down to playing and whose players play better. And, you know, we're going to try to prepare as hard as we can for what we know that they – are capable of doing and how they try to win, and I think they're going to do the same thing, and we'll see whose team can play that much better on Sunday.
On offense, Josh Royal hasn't had the production at the same rate he had last year. What do you attribute that to? Is it more attention from the defense, new quarterback?
I think, production to me kind of comes and goes sometimes in this system, because I don't think anybody really just tries to force the ball into one player. And there's been teams that have done some things to try to discourage us from throwing that way sometimes. Other times, there's somebody else that may be more open or, pressure or what have you. So Eddie Royal's playing fine. Eddie Royal's going to have a good season, and we know that. And I just think it's a matter of time before Eddie has, a number of catches in a game or some big plays that will help us win. And he's a patient guy. He understands our system. We do a lot of different things. A lot of people touch the ball, and that's how we've always run the offense there in New England, and that's how we're running it here. And we want our quarterback to get it to the guys that are, the most open based on the way the defense plays.
Josh, do you think the scene that played out at the end of the Dallas game with you and Brandon Marshall hugging, is that symbolic of the trust that you've not only been able to develop with that player, but with the rest of your team and the trust that they've bought in, or the trust that you've engendered with them?
I can't speak for everybody. I know this. I trust our players, and I think they trust, what we're telling them that we got to do to win each week. And I think that was more a player who loves playing football, a coach who loves coaching football, enjoying a moment and not really caring, that we are having some fun at that point in time. And that was all it was. And I'd do it with any one of our players. And if they feel the same way, then I'm sure that you could call that trust, if you will. But I think we have a lot of good players in this locker room, a lot of good leaders, a lot of good people that understand how to win and how to go about their business, and also a lot of people that enjoy playing this game.
Josh, you have a lot of guys that were here in New England last year. When you're kind of incorporating a system as a new coach, does it kind of make it easier when you're bringing in guys that you kind of are familiar with their strengths and weaknesses?
I think that the guys that we brought from New England, Lonnie and Ninjab and Lamont and Russ and McKeven and those guys that are here, I think they're familiar with the way we do our jobs and the way we work and how we approach each week and all that. And I think that just, it may help in some ways, down there where they can answer some questions that other players may have or what have you. But I think it just kind of helps us build a team, and those guys are all good players that have great roles on our team and do their jobs well, and that's why they're here.
Josh, can you talk about what went into the decision to wear the hooded sweatshirt on the sidelines, and did you consider other options?
Are you talking about this past weekend?
I'm talking about, I think you had it in the opener, this past weekend. I mean, you've worn it a couple times, right?
I think the last weekend was the first time I wore it. I don't know. I don't really think much about it. There's a number of options in my locker when I get to the stadium on game day, and I just kind of happened to pick that one. It got a little cool. It was in the 50s last weekend here, and I threw on the sweatshirt to coach the game. I think there's nothing else that really goes into that decision. I don't even know what I wear this week.
Josh, was there anything that you learned in dealing with the situation with Jay Cutler that you applied to Brandon Marshall and maybe did something different to get him to buy in and keep him in Denver?
No, we're so far past that situation, and Brandon did a great job of, we handled a lot of this stuff together. There's many things that many people don't know, and Brandon practices hard and plays hard and understands the game plan and all the rest of it, and sometimes things get blown out of proportion and are made to seem much worse than they actually are, and I've always had a great deal of respect for Brandon. I think he would say the same thing and about this organization and our relationship. And we're past that, and we're excited to be playing this week against New England.
What have you learned from Mike Nolan?
Mike has been a you know, a great addition to our staff, obviously, and he has an understanding of some of the things that that you know that happened during the course of the year as a head coach, because he's got experience in that role. A very good football coach. You know, comes from a different background in terms of you know, the terminology and some of the things that he's done defensively that I was, you know, privy to and understanding in New England. So there's a lot of different things that we've kind of melded together, and we've taken a combination of some of the things that I feel are very important and that he has obviously done throughout his career, and he does a great job of communicating that with his players, and right now he's got them playing well.
Josh, can you just talk about the job that Kyle Orton's done for you this year? I mean, he's the only starting NFL quarterback who hasn't thrown an interception. I know in your system, in the system here, how important decision-making is for the quarterback.
Yeah, you know, Kyle's done a nice job of taking care of the football, and you know, he understands our system. He understands what we try to do each week to win the game, and plays within himself, and at the same time, you know, understands when to pull the trigger on some different types of things and take some chances. And, you know, we've done that throughout the first 4 weeks. And so I think he's just getting better each week. And that's really where our focus is, because Kyle's only played 4 games in this system and 4 games for myself and our staff. So we feel like we got a lot of room to grow. And hopefully our performance, you know, not only at the quarterback position, but offensively and the entire team will continue to get better as the year goes on.
All right, that's Josh McDaniels, the head coach of the Denver Broncos, with Patriots Media at Gillette Stadium earlier today. And by the way, we do have an answer, Bill, for that email that you sent a short while ago on the trivia question about the Belichick assistants slash protégés and their first meeting against Belichick. There are only 3 coaches that have served under Bill that have gone on to be head coaches in the NFL. You'd have to start with certainly Eric Mangini. And then you have Nick Saban, and obviously Romeo Crennel. He is Bill Belichick's 5-2 against Mangini all time. He's 2-2 against Saban all time, so that puts him at 7-4 and 1-0 against Crennel. So 8 wins, 4 losses against former assistants that turned head coaches into the NFL. As far as the first time that he faced a former assistant as a head coach, Belichick is 3-0. So he has never lost to a former assistant the first time that he has faced them as a head coach in the NFL. So to answer your question, and thanks to Jason and the Patriots PR staff for digging that one up, Belichick has never lost to a protege for the first time after they have taken a head coaching job. Moving along now, we welcome into the program Vic Carucci, who's a senior writer for NFL.com and contributed to Patriots Playbook before. Vic, it's great to visit with you. Thanks so much for some time this afternoon.
Well, it's my pleasure. Great to be with you, too.
I don't know what you think of that particular number that we just kind of gleaned through the record books here, but a Belichick assistant, former Belichick assistant, who's going to be a head coach in the NFL, has never beaten Bill the first time out.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. You know, I also think there was something to the stat that rookie quarterbacks didn't fare too well against Belichick either prior to the Jets, Mark Sanchez facing the Pats in week 2, and that it was Ben Roethlisberger standing alone, and now Sanchez joins the list of rookies who won those games against him. But I think it says something about the teams that that Bill has had with the Patriots mostly being consistently good ones, and the protégés, the students, whatever you want to call it, who have graduated to head coaching jobs elsewhere, usually getting those jobs as first-timers because the teams that they're on haven't been good. So I think it probably says something about that as well. To really bore down and say that it's about how much more he would know than the student knows is probably a reach, because I think if they've been well-prepared, which they usually are, to get those gigs, the knowledge difference, if you will, the thing that would allow them to use their skill against the Pats is probably closer, you know, is probably closer. That gap is less daunting as maybe one thinks when they would look at the stat that says, you know, the student never beats the teacher.
Right, absolutely. Well, you know, of course, that there's some news that's been made around the NFL today that certainly is going to affect the Patriots at some point on down the line with all the movement of wide receivers. Michael Crabtree signed with the 49ers, and somewhat coincidentally, the Jets made a move and picked up Braylon Edwards from Cleveland. What are your thoughts on those two deals individually?
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, the Edwards acquisition isn't a surprise on two counts. The first being that the Jets were seeking an alternative, another receiving threat to besides Jericho Cotchery. And so it made sense for them to continue that search. And they were looking, I think, at different people. There was a lot of speculation that Plexico Burress could end up with the Jets. And of course, he's in prison. But so they make this move on that count. It makes sense. The fact that they dealt with the Browns makes sense. There's organizational ties between these two teams and a comfort level of doing business, as we saw on draft day for the trade that allowed the Jets to get Mark Sanchez in the draft. So with the Browns, that trade. So that is another reason why this doesn't come off as a surprise. But I think there is a third thing, and an NFL executive mentioned to me today after we were talking about this deal, and his comment was, yeah, that's a lot of baggage, though, that's going from Cleveland to New York. And it was a player that this particular executive, well-respected, and his team does pretty well, wouldn't have made. It's a deal he wouldn't have made because, you know, he was concerned about Braylon Edwards coming out of Michigan and thinks that baggage, you know, has only probably gotten expanded since he got into the NFL. And there's a potential suspension that this guy might face now with the altercation that was reported in Cleveland over the weekend or after their game Sunday. So so I think that part of it probably would make it a little bit of a head scratcher because you're going to wonder, you know, how will there be any loss of time if anything goes forward with the off-field issue, but I understand he'll be in uniform Monday night when the Jets face the Dolphins.
Do you feel like the Jets just simply felt like they needed more weapons in an effort to either keep up with the Patriots or even bypass the Patriots?
I don't think there's any question that the standard bearer of this division and of this league is you know right there in Foxborough. And they reinforced that with that win over Baltimore. And, you know, if you're Rex Ryan and the Jets and you feel like you've got something good going, which you should in terms of that defense, and you were able to come away with one win, in that series so far this year, I think you absolutely look at this as an opportunity to try to keep that. If I'm not sure if the question is, are they on equal footing and you're looking for an edge, which is what I do think it is, or you feel you've got a little, you certainly have a leg up in terms of the win this year in the head-to-head, but maintaining that is going to be hard, and you need all the help you can get. And yeah, I think there, it also shows me more faith that they have that despite Sanchez's four turnover game against New Orleans, that they're going to continue to give him opportunities to make plays, give him the people to whom he can make those plays. And so it tells me that, you know, they're not going to back down, even though he looked very much like a rookie last weekend.
Sure. Well, before I deal more specifically with the Patriots and or the Broncos for this week, just a couple of other quick questions about some other things around the league. Number one, are you surprised anymore at what Brett Favre can do?
I wrote this for NFL.com, and I'm going to say it again. I'm not going to say ever again. He may have to be being pushed around in a wheelchair at a nursing home before I'll believe this. I'm never going to say that this guy should retire or should have retired. I mean, you don't do what he did Monday night as just like a spurt or a surprise or whatever. That's what he can do. That's what he was capable of doing. I doubted that as much as anyone else. I thought it was over for him, you know, multiple years ago, at least a few years ago. And I was absolutely convinced there was no coming back from his poor performance in last season. But he did get the surgery. It's obviously helped him enough, and I know there was still a torn rotator cuff somewhere in there. Well, so what? The guy is a freak. His body is freakish. You're not supposed to play this well when you approach 40, and it isn't just what his arm, you know, what his arm could do and the effectiveness there, throwing some really laser-like passes that we've seen. How about the laser-like vision? How about seeing things quickly and processing them as quickly as he has, and no hesitation? You know, quarterbacks supposedly get that agent. It's the phone booth effect in the pocket and feeling claustrophobic. He doesn't feel any of that, and he steps around and steps back, and again, just put the Packer uniform back on him, and that looks like the Brett we knew in all those MVP, you know, in those multiple MVP seasons that we saw Monday night. Maybe even better. He's surrounded by players that he can take full advantage of. He's got a great line in front of him. He certainly has that running back, and that running game wasn't going well Monday night, and right. And he made that offense work. And I guess that's why he was signed. I thought he was signed to hand off. You don't sign Brett Favre to hand off.
Yeah, the other interesting thing I wanted to ask you about was something you wrote about as well on NFL.com about how several teams that are off to good starts have had some pretty decent makeovers with their team either offensively or defensively. For instance, the Giants are 4-0, and yet they've done, you know, a lot of this without a guy like Plaxico Burress in their lineup. Why do you think that is? Are teams just able to overcome their adjustments and their personnel, shall we say, inadequacies easier because they're smarter with their own roster, or because other teams haven't caught up?
Well, I want to say that I think it's just good personnel work. Yeah, I think because it's not universal. Not every team has been this successful. Seattle's still looking for the answer that they lost when Sean Alexander just got old. But what you're seeing is a league where people do fade, get older, wear down. You know, the LaDainian Tomlinses, the Terrell Owenses, aren't the players they were, and that was the point. I used 2006 as kind of the benchmark statistically, comparing it to what you see today. And a lot of those top players, Marvin Harrison, who isn't even in the league, and he was the NFL's third in receptions that year in the league, and not on a football team. But look at the Giants, who lose Plaxico Burress and presumably lost whatever offensive strength they had with his departure, and here they are with a guy like Steve Smith coming around for them in a big way, 34 catches and just being a dynamic player. Mm-hmm. So give credit to the personnel departments, I think, for what is an ever-evolving game. And teams that are consistently good, and I don't have to say this to Patriot fans because they know this, teams that are consistently good are always evolving and procuring and finding new players and saying goodbye to the ones that that do reach an end of the line.
Sure, I just got finished watching the Denver Dallas replay on NFL Network just a short while ago, and to me, the way that Denver went about its business looked a lot like the Denver of old before Josh McDaniels. What are your thoughts on Josh McDaniels and what he has done and what he's been able to bring to that team that might be giving them an advantage now, whereas Mike Shanahan couldn't?
Well, I think the first place you have to start is certainly that defense. I mean, that's the part of it that, you know, that was the Rubik's Cube, I guess, that Shanahan couldn't solve. Now, Shanahan's an offensive guy, but he's the head coach, and you've got to understand about making it a complete football team. And I think that was something, I know that it was something that Josh understood going in. It was what helped convince the Broncos ownership to hire him for the job, because he made it clear that you've got to have a good defense, got to have a good pass rush, and he had an answer, and his answer was Mike Nolan as his defensive coordinator, who's remade that defense into a 3-4 from a 4-3 base, and Elvis Dumervil has just been a terror. So I give Josh's input to all of this is important, because he talks to the defense, and I've talked to some of their defensive players about this. He talks with these guys about what they what they need to look for from a defensive perspective in the offense. He talks with them as hey, look, I know this offensive side, guys. This is what they're going to do. This is what they do. This is what you need to look for. And I think it's that extra input that has made a big difference in that team.
Okay. You know, he seems to, I know sometimes coaches bring intangibles to the equation, and sometimes just a different way of doing things gives guys a little bit of a lift because it seems new and they're eager and they get into it. How much do you think emotion pays or plays a factor in a place like Denver when somebody comes in and tries to sort of reinvent the wheel?
Well, emotion is, I think emotion's huge. And I think it, you know, a lot of that emotion was kind of negative, I think, to begin with at first.
Sure.
But Josh's enthusiasm, I think that's, it's probably more enthusiasm than emotion, but he's driven, and he has set a tempo there. And initially, a lot of that emotion, if you will, his way of doing business, you know, came on strong. And when you say goodbye to Jay Cutler as your first big defining thing, I mean, people start to question what you know, that if you can back up any of that knowledge you have, that reputation you have, with sensibility. And it looked like the Broncos were coming apart as soon as he got there, and he took him on. I mean, Cutler takes him on, and there had to be a winner or a loser in that, unfortunately for Josh and for the Broncos, and to a certain degree Cutler, although I think Cutler obviously ends up winning because he gets a bigger paycheck to go to another team that values him and considers him the be-all, end-all when he gets there, and that seems to be working out in Chicago. But in Denver, the question was, did he screw this up? And was the problem, you know, to some degree Cutler's approach, or was it McDaniels? Right now, 4-0, McDaniels is good. If it were 0-4, if it were 1-3, you know, we're having a different conversation here about
sure.
Josh McDaniels.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, then let's deal with that football team in particular, because I realize that, at Cincinnati, Cleveland, at Oakland probably isn't scaring anybody, but the fact is that they've given up 7, 6, 3, and 10 points respectively in 4 weeks. And in the NFL, I think that's extraordinary no matter who you're playing. What about that defense in particular has opened your eyes? Anything in particular?
The pass rush, more than anything. I mean, it's just the way that they've been attacking and the way they've been getting pressure. They're not much of a blitz team. I mean, they're doing this with I think convention defensively. I mean, mm-hmm. it's not exotic. They are moving Elvis Dumervil around. I think that's a big challenge that the Patriot tackles have to be aware of, because he could be on either side. And they're holding their own reasonably well in coverage, it looks like. So I think that, too, Brian Dawkins' presence in the secondary is a factor here. So it's interesting to see, you know, how this was the one element, I mean, that you could consistently talk about the Broncos lacking, and that was a pass rush. And that's not the case anymore. Right. So that's jumped out at me more than anything.
And then offensively, how do you feel Kyle Orton has settled into his particular job? About Brandon Marshall's all of a sudden maturity after he had his little preseason camp spat, you know, with Josh McDaniels?
It's been impressive. I mean, I give him credit for, if he was unhappy, which he clearly was, for coming around to the idea that there was, you know, that he's there, he wasn't going anywhere else, they weren't going to trade him, and be a professional, suck it up, and go along with the program, and which is what he seems to be doing. And I think he's figured out that he can earn his way and earn more money probably from that team to be a part of it. And this is where I'll give Josh McDaniels credit. Whatever disconnect existed, I don't know all the details of how it was solved, but there was disconnect. Clearly, he has managed to reconnect, and I think Brandon Marshall is embracing that. Again, winning does a lot to help that, and being successful. And it wasn't like, you know, the Broncos were having a great day throwing the ball against Dallas. They basically had one big play, and that was Marshall's. And you know, that's something to look at again from the Pats' point of view, is that, you know, I know they've got Ali Bodden there now, who looks to be the best of the cover people they have. But can he hold up when he faces Brandon Marshall? I don't know, because as I look at Marshall, there aren't that many corners in this league who can cover that guy.
Yeah, that's very true. He certainly is a physical presence. And Kyle Orton's started quarterback, his start of his Denver quarterbacking career?
Yeah, and as far as Orton is concerned, I mean, I think there's a comfort level that he seems to have, clearly has, in that scheme. I think a spread offense is the right thing for him. Certainly was the right thing that he did at Purdue, and I agreed with him there. And I think he trusts the guidance that he's getting. I think he trusts that he's being put in a good place by Josh McDaniels, and something, you know, tells me that this could be sustained, because it's a scheme that doesn't ask him to do more than what he's capable of doing, but it also doesn't undersell him. You know, it just seems like he's in the right place if there's that right middle area to be effective enough. But we all know, and you know, when we heard this early on in Tom Brady's career with the Patriots, that, well, you bring him along cautiously, you limit what he can do, and then eventually you expand. Or what you heard with Matt Ryan last year in Atlanta, or Joe Flacco with Baltimore, and that's an example of a guy who definitely was held in check by his coaches, and then has a more expanded game plan that he's using this year. I think that's what we're seeing with Orton, an older, more established guy than the other two. But I think McDaniels and Orton are finding their comfort zone, and I think with each game he's going to get a chance to do just a little bit more, but not too much.
We've seen, Vic, clearly that the Patriots have needed Tom Brady to shake off some of the rust from his knee injury, and certainly it's to be expected that there's going to be a certain amount that needs to be shaken off before he gets back into, shall we say, 2007-type form.
Right.
Are you of the opinion, based on what you've seen, and I know you were at the game last week against Baltimore, is he beginning to shake off some of that rust, and is this team capable, perhaps, still, of approaching some of the performances they had 2 years ago?
Oh, I don't think there's any question that he's shaking it off and that he is a more comfortable quarterback now than he was in the first couple of games of the season, and that's been huge for this team to have that, because it impacts not just how productive they are offensively, but it impacts, I think, everybody around him. I mean, everybody takes their cues from how comfortable he is and how smooth things operate by him. And the more guys I spoke with in that locker room last week, I mean, that was the feeling I got, is that, you know, everything, it's still not there. It's a work in progress, Ben Watson was calling it. But I think what he means by that is it's a work in progress, because the newest part, if you will, is Tom coming back from the knee injury. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not new, but it is new after a whole year off. So I think that part of it is something that they're gradually gaining, and that's why it's easy to look at this team. And I wrote about this after that game last week, is that I think that they as a team and Tom as a quarterback have to be seen as being right back to elite status when we had those doubts after week two, because of what happened these last 2 weeks and how much more comfortable Tom looks now.
Well, the Patriots defensively have missed Jerod Mayo as well, but then again, they haven't missed him maybe as much as they thought they would. Gary Guyton has certainly filled in a little bit. We continue to hear rumors that Junior Seau may not be too far off as well. Brandon Merriweather seems to have been a little bit more of now the emotional leader that this team craves defensively. Is this defense, is it better than you thought it was?
Yeah, it's playing better, and that is another surprise here, is that this defense certainly is stepping up to the challenge of being better despite the absence of some very good people, and you mentioned them, and who's not here anymore. And it's been a surprise to me, because I didn't think, frankly, that they could overcome it this soon, and it looks like they have. There were some very big stops they made against the Ravens. Ravens stopped themselves at times, but that's how games go. I don't think the defense gets every stop, even the best ones. And this is huge, because if this continues, it has to continue, I guess, to help carry things. But I also believe with the Patriots, when the offense is functioning, and it's going to get better, when it starts to function at a much higher level than it is now, There will be games where the offense can, as it's done in the past, bail out the defense. The question will be, for the sake of how far this team can go, how many games will there be where the defense bails out the offense? You know, where you get in a close game like they did against the Jets, and, you know, you're getting, what, 9 points out of the offense? Is your defense going to be able to make a difference on a day like that? And that's, you know, that's what you need to see. And my sense is they'll be capable of doing this as the younger players that have taken over at some of these spots mature and become better players.
Very good. Vic, always great to speak with you. Thanks for the time today. Thanks for the insight. And happy trails. I'm sure we'll run into you again soon.
My pleasure. Okay.
Bye-bye. You got it. Vic Carucci, senior editor, NFL.com, joining us here inside the playbook. Just a couple of quick emails I wanted to share with you first. TG and NJ sends a note. He says, John, wait a minute. The NFL doesn't want you to incite the crowd, but the Jets head coach can leave voicemails telling the fans to be loud on game day? It really is the no-fun league, isn't it? I don't see what the league is afraid of. You can't get a New England crowd excited anyways. Maybe the Pats can hire Fireman Ed. I'm sure for the right price he'd turncoat.
That's so ridiculous.
I actually think that's funny. We should, Jason. We should do that. We should go get Fireman Ed. Hey, Fireman Ed, you know, I got a fin here for you, buddy. Think you'd do it for $5?
Absolutely.
Well, let's see if he can do it. He could probably incite the crowd a little bit. Speaking of inciting the crowd, here's Christina Acra, who's got, we got Shop Talk coming up in a little bit. How's it going today? She got the microphone on?
Is
she in
there?
It's
going very well, John. I'm here. Oh. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. I caught you off guard, I'm sure.
You knew what happened with the red button here, but I got it. How's it going?
It's great. It's great today. What's happening in your world?
In my world, we're just in a Wednesday, coming off a Tuesday where the players are off. It's more of a community. You know, they're out and about doing things on their day off in the community, which is great. So we'll feature that in our show today, along with just practice, getting back into the swing of things as they gear up for this game in Denver. And obviously a big topic of the week is the head coach to head coach matchup, more so on the sidelines than on the field. So that always makes it interesting.
Absolutely. So we got that to look forward to, Patriots, today. How about anything special we're doing on Shop Talk today?
I'm not really sure. The guys came with a bag of goodies. It looks like it might be an automotive theme today with all the ways to pimp out your car, apparently. So
really?
Anybody who's listening now, stay tuned because we have some cool stuff in the studio that we're going to talk about and let you know about new things going on in the pro shop.
Nice. All right, that's coming up here.
Do you want to tease our special guest, Christina?
Shop Talk.
Oh, yes, and our special guest, everybody out there in internet land knows Ken Flanders is joining us today. So he's in finally. We've officially met, and he's going to be in with us for the next hour. So.
Nice. All right, surprises in store. It's all coming up here in a couple of minutes. Let me finish up then here with another quick email. Gene sends this message from Daytona Beach, and he says, John, do you believe that the teams Denver has played under underestimated Josh because he's young and with the off-the-field problems in Denver didn't prepare properly? Believe me, New England knows how good a coach Josh is. I also believe we should not confuse our players with new ideas and just stick to what we know we can do well. I don't think Denver's been underestimated. I really don't. I don't think they've been underestimated. Maybe there was a factor of the unknown because Josh hasn't been a head coach before and he hasn't exhibited any tendencies. But honestly, I would think that the opposing teams would take a good solid look again, if they didn't already know, at what the Patriots have tended to do in certain situations and then sort of been prepared for that in addition to what Denver has done particularly well over the years in terms of their running backs and some of the other things. So surprised or underestimated? No, I don't think so. But now that you're beginning to make books, so to speak, on a guy like McDaniels, my guess would be teams will be better prepared the second time around that they face him, which then will test McDaniels in terms of his ability to counter-adjust or readjust. Gene also says, I believe Darren Sproles or his type of runner would be a great change of pace. I also noticed here in Florida, a lot of college teams here are going to the smaller runner to hide behind the offensive line to dart out for big runs. That may very well be the case. But if we have a guy that's already sort of diminutive like that, if you will, for lack of a better phrase, in Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, I'm not sure what a guy like Darren Sproles would really do to add to the equation. I don't know that he'd give you a different look. I kind of think we sort of already have that that style of runner in New England, which is why I wasn't sure that Sproles really was, if you're looking for free agent backs, I'm not sure that he'd be, you know, my first, you know, within my first couple of choices. Now, that being said, a lot of time can happen between now and, you know, and certainly, you know, the signing period for next year, and thoughts may change, players may come and go. And, of course, hey, the fact that 2010 could be an uncapped year, that will have a lot to do with it in terms of you know, who you might go after in free agency. Tomorrow on the program, Russell Baxter, of course, will be with us. From ESPN, NFL Research Coordinator. Any other goodies that we have in store, Jace, that you know of?
We're maybe working on one more guest from CBS Television Network, but we're waiting for some confirmations. But I do have the practice report if you're interested.
Please,
if you're running
fire
out the
away.
Door.
Yeah.
Randy Moss did not practice. Fred Taylor did not practice. Nick Kazier, Gerard Mayo, James Sanders, Sean Springs, Wes Welker, and Vince Wilfork, limited participation, and, of course, Tom Brady, right shoulder, full participation.
I'm not surprised by any of that. I think the big key then, you know, as you kind of take it on Wednesday, the first time they do the report, big key is to see if anybody improves their status tomorrow. And then Friday, before they get on the plane and head to Denver. So tomorrow, to me, will be a more of a key day in terms of the injury report or the, shall we say, the practice participation report for the Patriots. All right, stick around. Make sure you tune in tomorrow. Again, we'll have Russell Baxter, and we'll dive into the Denver Broncos-New England Patriots matchup a little bit more. Same Pats time, same Pats channel.